What's up, everybody? Welcome to We Have Cool Friends, the cool show. We interview our cool friends about the cool things they're doing. I'm Greg, and this is my cool friend, Ashley Birch.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for coming. We started We Have Cool Friends years ago now, and you are one of the most requested people to always come on.
Oh, that's nice.
I don't know if you know this. People actually like you a lot.
I do. They're not
just saying
it.
They're not just saying it. I understand.
I assumed it was all. Yeah, I thought it was a ploy.
All the awards and the nominations, just trying to get you to show up to something. No, they really like you, Ashley. How are you?
You know, in 2020 terms, on the 2020 curve, as you said, pretty decent.
Yeah, hanging in there. Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. Obviously, you're here right now because of Marvel's Avengers. You are Kate Bishop. I played through your whole story last night. We'll talk about it in a little bit. But in general, you don't even want to say for a pandemic, for just a year, you've had a hell of a year. And I mean, like, that's not abnormal, obviously. Everybody's seen you progress and, you know, become this well-known actress. But I mean, I wrote down the stuff that I remembered you from, let alone Musher in Red Lantern, Danica in Spider-Man Miles Morales, Mel in The Last of Us Part 2. I know you're doing the Mythic Quest. You got stuff going on in Valorant. You're showing up in Critical Role. This has been a great year for you outside of the end of humanity.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to go out with a bang.
You want to be remembered fondly when we're warming ourselves around the fire pits as we stand under freeways.
Yeah, I want everyone to remember Valorant as they're, as they're trying to keep their bones warm.
What is, it's always so hard, I guess, because you will always be something very specific to me. And that's, I remember, and I don't have this for a lot of the people I know through the internet, but I remember the moment I was introduced to you as a performer. And it was, we were at IGN, old office. It must have been like 2008, maybe even 2007, but you would know better, I guess, when we get into the story. But it was Ryan Clements was still new at IGN, and he was talking about how he could not stop laughing at, "Hey, Ash, what you playing?" Uh-huh. And I was like, what is that? And I came around and watched a couple of them and got addicted. But it's this moment of watching you do these, you know, YouTube videos, these videos on the internet, right? Sketch comedy around video games, and be like, oh, that's cool. I wonder if there's a future in that. To then jump now to 2020 and you've had this banner year as an actress. Like, do you, how do you wrestle with that? Because I think it's so interesting to watch you from arm's length from the internet, you know, just be somebody who we each follow each other on Twitter or whatever, to see your success. Do you ever stop and get to think about it, or is it just on to the next project all the time and you don't think about the journey?
I mean, it's bizarre. I usually only think about it in a context like this.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think about because it doesn't seem that long ago to me. But then you say 2008,
yeah,
and I realize it's more than a decade ago.
Yeah,
that we started. Hey, you know what I mean? It's just really, it's mostly just surreal because I really don't feel like we started Hey Ash that long ago, but we absolutely did. So I'm so grateful for all the projects I've been able to be a part of, but I still definitely, there's a part of me that's like, but I'm still just that person that did Hey Ash. I'm still of that level. Like I don't, that my,
so totally,
I hasn't progressed past that in my brain, even though a lot of amazing stuff has happened. A time is also just weird now. It feels compressed and it's turning in on itself. But yeah, I don't really think about it in that way, except that I just get excited for the projects that I get to be a part of. But it's bizarre for sure.
I think for so many normal people, the people who listen to our shows or watch our shows, right? You talk to them and it is this idea of what they wanted to do, where their career took them, what field they were entering. When you start doing Hey Ash, are you doing it with the mindset that this is going to get you into being an actor? This is going to get you into games? This is going to get you into live action? Is it just something fun you're doing?
No, I mean, I think I remember that the stated goal of Hey Ash was just to help Anthony learn how to use a camera. He wanted to, a while ago before Indie Game the movie came out, he wanted to make a documentary about indie game developers. And so he basically came up to me and was like, do you want to make stupid sketches so I can figure out how to use this camera? And I said, sure. And I feel like people say this all the time. Like, we had no idea it was going to be so big. We truly didn't. We had no idea. I mean, big. We were definitely still niche.
And I guess it's, and also that thing, like I'm doing the thing I get yelled at all the time in the comments about, is that everyone does probably know you as Aloy. They know you from Life is Strange. They, what is Hey Ash? If, in case they didn't know Hey Ash, we're talking about this thing that's 12 years old. Like it's everybody knows it. It's taught in schools, YouTube. Isn't it?
Hey Ash, What You Playing is a sketch series that I did with my brother Anthony. That was basically just all video game related comedy. So it was back in the old early days of the Wild West of YouTube, where I was like us and Mega 64 and Smosh, and that was basically it.
Yeah.
So there weren't many options, so you guys were stuck with us. So yeah, it was just silly comedy that had, you know, us and our family members and our friends in it. And like I said, they were originally just an exercise in learning how to make film, movies, whatever. And it ended up being the thing that led to all the other things in a way that's really bizarre to me. Like Hey Ash is part of the reason that I got hired to write for Mythic Quest.
Wow.
10 years later. So it's kind of nuts to think about, but yeah, that's sort of the thing that we didn't intend for it to be, but it was what launched both of our careers really.
So at the time, right before he asked you, do you want to shoot dumb videos? What are you planning to do with your life? What are you going to be doing in 12 years?
I wanted to be a voice actor. Okay. I knew since I was, it was like 10 or 12 when I played Metal Gear Solid. And yeah. I was like, I want to do this. So that was my goal. I didn't think about the fact that Hey Ash could help with that, apart from just getting an opportunity to act and do comedy with my brother. But yeah, that was what I wanted to do.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I like that. And then I assume it just opened doors, right? Because I know obviously you'd go on to do sponsored stuff. And I remember that's when I saw you in my, you know, feeble mind breaking out is when you started doing partnerships with the games you were actually parodying or making jokes about.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I remember actually Hey Ash is what got Anthony the job writing at Gearbox. So he wrote Borderlands 2 in part because of Hey Ash. And then Valve reached out to me to work on Team Fortress 2 stuff, I think because of Hey Ash and Tiny Tina. So it definitely, I mean, it's a really weird resume because there's so many really immature, bizarre jokes in that show. But it was kind of a good resume. I mean, especially back then, I feel like I was saying, there just wasn't as much stuff out there. So if we made a video about Dance Central, the dudes from Dance Central were like, hey, look, there's this weird video about our game. So yeah, it was a really great way to get connected to, again, it was not the intention, but it was a really great way to get connected to game companies and game developers and stuff like that.
So you talked about, you know, bringing to the present day that, you know, you still struggle when you think about it sometimes of you're still just from Hey Ash. That's just what you do, right? Like, but have you come to grips with the professionalism of it? Not that you were unprofessional before, but like the fact that you are, but the fact that like, this is your career now, this is your life. Like, do you still feel like you're, I guess, faking it?
Sometimes. I think I've gotten way more comfortable with voice acting. Like at the beginning of my career, I definitely had really intense imposter syndrome. I remember I was cast in this Nickelodeon pilot and I was like recording and shaking and my voice was not usable because I was so nervous because I just was like, how did I get here? What am I doing here? But I think, I mean, thankfully I've just been doing this work now for so long that I think my brain ran out of anxiety chemicals. They're like, I guess, you know, you haven't died yet from doing this, so I guess you're fine.
They keep hiring you. They keep hiring me,
so I guess you're fine. But you know, anytime that there's I keep using this phrase today and it bugs me every time. I need to think of a non-game punny phrase, but level up every time I level up. So for instance, something like Mythic Quest, I had been in a writer's room, but not in a professional comedy writer's room with 10 writers and folks that had made TV. So that was like a new thing that I then had to sort of wrap my head around. Okay, I can do this. I can be here. I belong here, you know, and then acting in that show, same thing. So it's one of those things where like, I think also because I've moved to bigger, scarier things, voiceover now feels like a cozy little home for me. I'm sure. Like, I know how this works. I've done this for years. I feel comfortable with this. This is like a safe spot for me to back to when I do all the scary stuff that incites my imposter syndrome.
Totally. And I think that was the thing of, it's been so interesting as a fan to watch you grow and level up, as you say, trademark Ashley Birch, to see you, you know, get bigger roles and go. Because I remember like Life is Strange, be like, oh my God, like that's awesome. But then of course, like Horizon was around the corner and like Horizon drops, and you're like, oh my God, like a AAA, you know, 40 hour campaign from Guerrilla that they're putting all this into. And like, you're the lead in it and you kill it. It was like, it's been interesting to, I think like we're talking now of like the people who are listening or watching the show and have no idea the YouTube show or never heard of it, but never watched it, and think of you as professional voice actress. And I think of you as like, oh no, she was a YouTube person like us. She did this, she did the goofs and the gaffs, and then
she went out got poop into jokes, and yeah. And now they're letting her be the lead of a franchise.
Yeah, no pressure.
So
Let me do the rigmarole for the show before I ask you more, because I do want to talk to you about Kate here. Ladies and gentlemen, this, of course, is We Have Cool Friends, each and every week on youtube.com/kindoffunny. And podcast services around the globe, we sit down with one of our cool friends to find out about the cool stuff they're doing. If you like that, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Of course, you can get the show ad-free there. And most importantly, you can write in as a kind of funny best friend and get your question read in the friend zone. Hear what the guest has to say as they answer your stuff. Housekeeping for you, it's worth pointing out, this is the final week of Kind of Funny 2020. We are taking a holiday break. We will be back on January 4th for our big anniversary stream, 12 hours as we usher in the year 6 of Kind of Funny, if you can believe it. And it's also kind of wishy-washy about this being last week, because technically there'll be a PS I Love You next week, but it's an awards thing. Don't worry about it. Don't stress about it. It's just look for content, you'll get it. Today we're brought to you by Manscaped, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, back to Ashley Birch. You're really good at your job. I've said that before. I'm a fan. I'm already in the tank. You know that or whatever. But what I like about you is that you have this range. And I think you see it with Tina being super bombastic and crazy. You see it with Chloe Wright being this dialed in multidimensional character. You see it with Aloy, obviously, of being in this rock and hard spot of like, you know, far-flung future stuff in the past. I won't get into the spoilers of Horizon. Don't worry about it. But Cade Bishop last night playing through, I thought you did such a good job of giving a character I know so well from the Matt Fraction books a personality all her own. How much of that is you coming into that space and talking to the writers? Is it all on the page? Where does that go?
I think with this project in particular, there was a really awesome marriage of a great script and a great director. And they let me really, bring my interpretation to the character. I mean, when I auditioned, I didn't know it was Kate. They had written this really awesome script that was just about two people at a stakeout, basically. And it was really well written, and the relationship was on the page in such a good way. I'm realizing now that, of course, it was supposed to be Kate and Clint.
Sure.
But it was just really well written. And what's so amazing about having a script that's well written is that you then really feel like you can take it and you can add to it, and you can bring yourself to it, rather than spending the audition just trying to kind of make it work. Because there are some scripts that you get that you're like, I don't know what to do with this. So it all starts with the writing, and the writing was really good. And so I kind of just tried stuff. I know that in the audition, I was a bit improv-y and a bit ad-libby. They seemed amenable to that. And then for the last take, I just had this thought, like, it'd be funny if she was just eating nuts the whole time. So I like went into the kitchen of the studio and I got nuts, and I was just eating nuts while talking to who was supposed to be Hawkeye. And they were into it. So I think it was cool, because from the audition, it seemed like they really wanted to see what I would bring, and they were really open to what I was going to bring. And I've known of Kate and have loved Kate for a while, and I love in part how funny she is.
Sure.
And so it was really cool to be able to tap into that, and for the developers and for my director to be open to whatever weird bullshit I wanted to pull.
I'll stop her there. Was the boop a poll. I saw you put up they put up the trailer and you quote tweeting, you're like, they kept the boop. And I didn't understand it because I didn't watch the trailer. But then last night when I was playing it, you boop one of the bad guys on the nose. And I was like, oh, was that an ad lib or what was that?
That was an ad lib. I saw they either had a animatic or they had some prelim like motion capture-y stuff. But I saw that she flicked the guy and I just went for a boop and they kept it. Which is great.
Very nice. Yeah. It's getting to, you know, bring the jovial nature of Kate out. Mm-hmm. And I think that was what surprised me is I expected that, right? This is always an interesting thing for something like this. You do the stakeout, you find out, okay, it's Kate Bishop. You know, you've been cast as Kate Bishop in the Avengers game. Did you already have a knowledge for her? Did you go back and read her stuff? Like, or do you want to stay away from that and bring your own interpretation? Like what kind of research do you do for that?
I definitely was already familiar with Kate Bishop, but, I also, it's one of those things where you don't want to get so in your own head with trying to fulfill an expectation.
Sure.
Because then that's sort of a straitjacket. Like this is a sort of a trap that I fell into when I was a younger actor as well, is just sort of trying to guess exactly what the developer wanted or what the writer wanted or whatever. Mm. And you can't, it's impossible. Like, I'm going to be exactly what some people heard in their head when they read Kate Bishop, and I'm going to be an abomination of Kate Bishop to some people. And there's just no, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So the best I can do is bring the best of what I have to offer and what is my interpretation. Because if you're trying to find the sweet spot that satisfies everyone, you're going to make something flat that doesn't take any risks and doesn't really say anything or do anything, you know?
Is that key to the whole acting thing? I think, you know, we had earlier this year, Nolan North on, a complete hack, but you had to work with him on this project. And he talked about that as well, right? Of like going in and I think we were talking about how, you know, he gets guff on the internet for always just being Nolan. And he's like, well, like, that's what I'm going to come in and do what I want to do with that character. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, I don't get hired. It's fine. Like, I feel like that seems like a thing that you're talking about. Most people would get in their head about what this director wants or what this person wants. Like, is that key to the whole thing, is forgetting that?
I think so. I mean, it's funny that people bag on Nolan for that, because Nolan has really insane range. I think people just don't know that he's
like, not gonna listen to this. You don't have to kiss his ass.
No, but it's true. I mean, I remember playing Last of Us and being like,
yeah,
that
David
was fucking Nolan North.
Yeah.
And like losing my mind. Anyway, I really think that's what it is. I mean, the thing is, actually, there was a woman that I spoke to who's a seasoned voice actor and performer and improv person. And I remember her giving me a pep talk once. And she said something basically that's like, it sounds simple and kind of corny without really knowing the process, but it's so true. What she was basically like, the only thing that you bring that no one else brings is yourself. So I can look at a script and you can look at a script and our interpretations of the character are going to be vastly different. And I did not realize how 100% right she was until I did, I had to do some mix and match chemistry tests for Mythic Quest. And that basically means there are multiple women up for the role that I'm up for and multiple women up for the other role, the like love interest role. There's like a bunch of different women up for the same roles. And then the producers do a mix and match where they go, okay, how is this Rachel with this Dana? And how is this Dana with this Rachel? And before I got cast, I did this thing and I was in the room with like seven different people. And every single person read Dana so differently. And it's so funny because I was also in the writer's room. So I knew what I thought Dana should sound like. But no one was bad either. It was one of those things truly where there was a person that was right for the part and everyone else had a really interesting interpretation that just wasn't right for the part. So it's one of those things where like, you can't guess what anyone's looking for. And if you don't get a part, it's not that you're bad. It's that they're looking for something specific. And some people will be able to find that and some people won't. But then also sometimes if you would just make a bold choice, you're giving them something that they didn't even know that they wanted. So it's really not a guessing game. It's more about what do you want to show and what do you want to bring?
When you approach roles from that perspective, do you have any preference on whether it's going to be straight VO, you're in your closet surrounded by towels talking to microphone, or something like Avengers where you're in the ping pong ball suit and you're walking around and you get to use the space?
It sounds like such a cop-out answer. I mean, I love it all.
Just give me jobs.
I mean, there's something really comforting about voiceover. I feel like I'm so comfortable in a booth. There's just something that I feel like I'm in my element when I'm in a voiceover booth. With motion capture and on camera, it's a relatively newer skill set. So I'm learning a lot more as I do those types of projects. And I'm learning how to be most authentically myself and bring my most authentic performance in those contexts in a way that I feel like I have kind of down more so with voiceover.
Sure.
So they give me different things, you know, but I love motion capture. It's so fun. I mean, it's the closest thing to folks like us get to being in a play, kind of.
Right. Well, there's so I think that's, if you've never been or watched behind the scenes stuff, if you've never been on a set or watched behind the scenes stuff, like so much of it, well, the first time I ever toured a mocap set or sat in on a session, it all reminded me of, you know, my limited drama background in like high school, where it was that there's blocking. And like, I remember it's not even what it was to be on stage with it as much as it was to be rehearsing in a space and have like wood blocks. And that's that. And you have to pretend so much of what all this is to then make it go and see in the game what it actually is.
Right. Yeah.
So, No, please. Well, this is the joy of 2020 interviews where it's like, you go. No, you go. It's my turn. So then back to Kate then. Like, you don't want to get too much into it. You get the script. You see what it is. You start working through it. Like, what I liked the most about it was not beating you over the head with it, but watching her wrestle with everything that's going on with Clint. And again, I won't put spoilers in here I want everybody to play it, obviously. But even from the teaser trailers you've seen of him being in AIM custody and what's going on, and there being this subterfuge of like, well, did he switch sides? Is he doing this and that and the other? Like, I guess for that, when you want to approach that, how far back do you go for something like this where you're doing VO and you have to build a backstory for what's happened? Because obviously, like you said, we know Clint, we know Kate, we know their history from comics. That's not necessarily what's happening here. Are you one of the actors who like really sits there and thinks it all the way through, or are you taking it more from where you pick up with them?
I kind of try to do some sort of measure of both. With voiceover, you sometimes don't have the luxury of being able to sit with a script. You might be finding out, you know, Life is Strange, for example, I didn't know what was happening on the day that we were recording until I got into the booth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it would be a situation where I would show up and my director would say, hey, so just so you know, we're going into an alternate timeline and have fun. So that's kind of more my background, is sort of like seeing it, processing it, go.
Okay.
But with this game, I did get scripts and I was able to review them beforehand. And so it was really nice to be able to, sort of plot where is she going. And finding the sort of the where to turn up and down the volume knob in terms of, I mean, it's all contextual stuff, right? Of finding this character and making sure that she stays focused, doesn't break down too much, it's basically being judicious about where do you find those moments of emotion, because you want to make sure that she feels fully fleshed out and complex, and that you're feeling that sort of tension, but also she is driven and focused and she has a job to do. But also a huge part of that is working with the director. And I had a really amazing director. His name is Kal-El, if you can believe it. And and sort of finding and pacing that stuff out with him of like, okay, sort of what's the music of this arc or of the scene that we need to hit these moments and make sure that we're staying honest to where she is in her arc, and also what are the requirements of even just fundamentally like gameplay, you know?
Sure.
There are some conversations that take place while she's fighting.
Yeah.
And so you have to balance all those things.
Well, that's what I thought was so great about it, and one of the things that I love about Avengers is the banter between them, right? Because mm-hmm. I think it could be so simple to have no one talk while you fight or run around one of the giant open environments, but instead here you do have dialogue. It was sussed out whether, you know, it'll be in a cutscene with you ripping on Tony or whatever, right, calling him Iron Pants, and then it'll be you're in the elevator coming up and down getting stuff that, but then yeah, there it is sprinkled in as you go, and I thought it was awesome to see that context given of what's been going on with her. Like, you know what I mean, we know the Avengers are back, and this has been one of the big questions I think for fans as since we've known about the launch of the game of, all right, cool, the Avengers have been gone for 5 years, now they're back, but what does that mean for everybody else? And seeing right. you know, Kate talk about that and Hawkeye talk about being like abandoned basically and left behind yeah. by them and what that means, like it was interesting to see those relationships, you know, I guess mature and see what was going to be happening 5 years later. And, you know, when, even when Iron Man's like, you were a kid, you're like, I was 19.
Right.
What is it like? And this is maybe a hard left turn, but do you have any ownership over Ms. Marvel? Like, you know, you voiced her in Lego Avengers. You were like the first canonical voice of her. Mm-hmm. There's a scene in this where, you know, Kate, spoilers, decides she's going to stay with the Avengers, and, you know, Ms. Marvel freaks out about it. And I thought that was super cute, but like, did that resonate with you from somebody who's played both roles?
I mean, with this type of situation, you know, it's funny with Marvel and the Avengers in general, because you're usually going to have like five different people playing this one character, depending on what project, you know, you might have, you're going to have the person in the movies, person in the cartoon, person in the game, yeah. person in this other game. So it's one of those things where I think you try to embody the character and sort of let it go. And I think the Ms. Marvel that we have is a perfect Ms. Marvel.
Oh man, she's fantastic. Yeah. No, I wasn't trying to take it that way. I just thought, I think it's cool. No. I'm not trying to start anything. All right. I'm not starting shit actually. All right. We're not trying to start a rival.
Stop stirring the pot, Greg.
Except for Nolan. He sucks. All right. Gugh. You know what I mean? What a miss. We love Nolan North. Everybody knows that. So yeah, like I guess my other question would be, since you are now such a storied actor, so many different roles and parts and stuff, are you, I was talking to Yuri Lowenthal recently, right? And I was asking him, as somebody else who's in a million things, right? Whether it be animation, games, all this stuff. I'm like, do you have like that catalog in your head of you remember everything and all these different things? Or for you, is it that you go in there, you record it, obviously enjoy it, you bring something to it, but then you leave it at the door? And like, if I was to come up and ask you some random thing about Kate Bishop in a year and a half from now, would that still resonate with you? Or do you feel connection to your roles after they're over?
I think, I mean, totally honestly, I think it depends on time a lot of the time. So like, there are certain games or certain projects that I've been on where I show up for a day.
Yeah.
I might even play three characters and then I leave. So that, just by the very nature that it was a day out of my life, may not resonate with me as much as another project. But generally, if I spend a lot of time with a character, I form an affection and an attachment to them. Yeah. So a lot of the characters that I've spent, you know, multiple hours with, of course, there's like Tiny Tina and Chloe and Aloy and all those guys and Kate and Parvati. If I've spent a lot of time with the character, I get invested in the character just like a player would, yeah. and or a viewer would. And I form an affection for them. So, yeah, I mean, if you ask me about a one day gig that I did at the beginning of my career, I might be like, oh, I was in that. But but for any of the roles that I spent a lot of time with, I always have a connection to those characters.
It's funny, you know, you mentioned you as a player, you as a viewer. Are you still a player? Like, are you still finding time to play games and get into everything?
Yeah, I mean, games have been a huge way that I've stayed in touch with friends during this time, honestly. Yeah. And I haven't been able to get the next gen consoles yet. I totally biffed it.
You're too busy.
Not pre-order.
You can't be there sitting there waiting to hit the direct buy link from PlayStation or whatever. Gotta follow Wario64, get the notifications.
So I haven't been able to dive into some of the newer games that have come out. But yeah, I still definitely play. I love games. And
what are you drawn to these days?
To stay in touch with friends, I've been playing a lot of ARAM, actually. Okay. League of Legends.
Yeah.
Because they love it and they play it all the time, so I've gotten really into it. I'm excited to jump into Spider-Man.
Oh, sure. You're so good in that too.
Oh, thanks, man. And Avengers. I just haven't, for the last like 3 months, my life has been a black hole of being on set and then coming home and sleeping immediately. So I haven't really had time, but I'm excited, especially for the holiday period, to just dive into some games. I'm really psyched.
Are things, and I guess this is, you know, you're an actor, so it's different all the time, but are things in terms of your professional life going back to some kind of normal? Like, I know that was at the beginning of this, it's been such a toss up of, right, you know, all these sets get shut down. So live action stuff's paused, but then mocap was weird for a while. But then if you're just doing VO, people were turning rooms and, you know, into amazing studios. And now I know so many people are going to, you know, we have a COVID nurse on site. You get tested, you come in, you still stay apart and all that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. How has your 2020 career trajectory been changed?
Well, I'm really lucky in that I decided to get a booth pretty early on. I hadn't had one before. This is my booth, actually.
It's a nice one.
Thank you. They had a coronavirus sale.
Ooh. So I mean, hey, you got to do what you got to do.
So I got a booth, and all of the projects that I've worked on have been, honestly, it's pretty impressive how innovative and how malleable people have been. So like, I have all the stuff to the side here is tech for Horizon Forbidden West. I have a head cam in there for when I record with them. I have a mic set up. I have, you know, I just was like, okay, I'm going to make my house a studio. Here we go. And so I've been really lucky in that I've been able to work from home apart from being on set. So I haven't been to a studio in months. And I probably will just keep it that way for a while. Just, you know, just, I think, being cautious right now.
Let's see how this all goes. Yeah, no, we're the same way. Where it's like, yeah, you know, don't worry about next year, everybody. You're still working from home. Like,
let's just take it a day at a time. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Aren't we all sick of the, just 3 more months? Oh, just, you know, another couple of weeks. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Now, before we went live, I hit up Herman Hulse and he said, you could tell me everything about Horizon. So how's that shaping up?
That's that doesn't really sound like him.
I thought it was weird too. But yeah, he said, go for it and enjoy a beer. And I was like, oh, that's Herman. And then here we are. All right. Well, you know what?
You know, out of an abundance of caution, I think I'm just going to stay away that from question. Spoiler.
Yeah,
Dodge it. But I will say that I'm really excited. Like I said, I play games. I played the first Horizon and I'm a fan. And I cannot wait for people to play this game. It's going to be so good.
We can't wait to play it, so don't worry about that. Actually, are you ready to enter the friend zone and have the kind of funny best friends ask you some questions?
Let's do it.
Too bad you have to wait. Ladies and gentlemen, remember you go to patreon.com/kindoffunny where you can support the show, be part of the show, and get the show ad-free. Speaking of ads, Gregway, here's a word from our sponsor. This episode of We Have Cool Friends is brought to you by Manscaped. Listen up, fellas. 2020 sucked. It's new year, new balls with our sponsor, Manscaped. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming, offering precision-engineered tools for your family jewels and helping 2 million men all over the world get rid of hair on their balls. If you let yourself go in 2020 while in quarantine, Manscaped is here for you to do a reboot and stay clean and shaved in 2021. Of course, we all know 2020 sucked, all right? A lot of problems. Chief among them for some of you was that you just didn't groom yourself. Of course, you know, we've been using Manscaped here for a long time. We groomed ourselves. We didn't cut ourselves. We had a great time. Manscaped is here to give everyone a fresh start in 2021 with our Perfect Package 3.0. That's all the right tools for the job. Come out of quarantine with clean balls thanks to the Lawnmower 3.0. This waterproof and skin-safe trimmer will reduce nicks to your two best friends. The third generation trimmer even has a light to keep the glow up if you need to in 2021. It's also time to freshen up down there. The Crop Preserver, it's an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? And for the go-to on the freshness, you need it right away. You'll love the Crop Reviver. Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. 2020 was awful, so make sure your boys are refreshed and ready for new beginnings in 2021. Manscaped even threw in their Shed Travel Bag to keep all your goodies stored and comfortable. Speaking of comfort, the Manscaped anti-chafing boxer briefs are also included and are hands down the best underwear you'll ever wear. A guy with hairy balls is like the year 2020. Don't be that guy. Get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com/morning. That's manscaped.com/morning. 20% off, free shipping, and your balls will thank you. Now we're in the friend zone. All right, don't worry. I insert the ad after the way. You're fine. Now you're all set. Where do I want to start with you? Where do I want to start with you? Mm. Oh, I like this one. Emmett Watkins Jr. writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, "Hey, Ash, big fan. Wanted to know if you ever feel like you might get pigeonholed into roles for characters that are more jubilant or bombastic. I know roles like Tiny Tina and most recently Kate Bishop are fun to do, but do you ever crave something more serious, some of the more serious roles more often, like Aloy or Mel from The Last of Us 2? Parentheses for the record. I love all the roles you get. Just curious to know how you feel."
Interesting. I feel pretty lucky in that I feel like I've been able to run the gamut. For a while, I think I was playing mostly just wacky characters, but I think ever since Chloe, I've sort of been able to dip my toes into both. I don't often get cast as villainous characters. So Viper and Valorant was pretty fun for that reason. I don't usually get to be cruel and mean. and it's pretty fun whenever I've gotten to do it. So, yeah, I mean, I always like a challenge and I always like changing it up, but I actually feel like, especially, you know, with Aloy as well, there's like a lot of really heavy range, like meaty stuff in Zero Dawn and Forbidden West. So,
well, that's what I thought was so interesting about Last of Us Part Two is that, you know, I have a pretty good ear, and that was the first time where you popped, or I shouldn't say that, it was the first time in a while and memorably where you popped up and I was like, that sounds like Ashley, but is it like the way you were playing Mel, right? With, I thought it was just, and at the end, obviously spoilers, it boils over, but like she has so much emotion just beneath the surface. And so like, just to bring it down into that register, that's like right in between, right? That isn't super serious and isn't up here like Tina or whatever. It was interesting to see you ride that line.
Thanks. Thank you.
No problem. I don't know why I was like, no problem. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about anymore. It's the end of the day. Adam Garcia writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, "Hey, Ashley, been a huge fan for many years from the early days of Hey, Ash. Your career has been inspiring to watch. As a fellow Phoenician, he's from Phoenix.
Phoenician?
Yeah, that would make sense. What's the one thing you miss about Arizona?"
Well, I guess this one's kind of moot now because I've found out I'm lactose intolerant, but Oregano's. There's a pizza chain there called Oregano's that makes delicious sloppy food. And
Kevin, give me Oregano's on screen. I need to see this pizza. Get it up there. Let us see Oregano's from Arizona.
They have a dessert there called it's a pizookie. You've had a pizookie before, sure, but they make theirs in a deep dish pizza. So it's like a cookie that thick, crusty on the outside, gooey on the middle, ice cream on top. It's the best thing you've ever had.
Damn.
I miss it. Sound
good. No, I understand why. No, I tell me about the pizza. What's the pizza like?
The pizza, you know, you really go there for the bazooka, to be honest. But they have thin crust pizza. They have a pasta there called the Big Rig that sounds, it tastes like a deconstructed Hot Pocket.
The Big Rig. Oh my God. Now, hold on. Kevin's throwing it up here. I'm looking at this pizza. Now, hold on.
Look, it's not, anyone that's like really into pizza is not going to be like, oh, what I've been looking for, the mecca of pizza.
Actually, but I don't know if you look at me and think I'm going to some Michelin star pizza restaurant, all right? You tell me a gas station bathroom's got a good pizza, I'm lining up for it, all right? Just let me look at this pizza and enjoy for a second. God, that's a deep, you talk about deep dish pizza, that's a deep, look at that, look at the crust on this guy right there.
Oh, he's, yeah, they're not messing around over there at Oregano's.
Oh my gosh. How you doing with this lactose intolerant business?
Well, I try to stay away from dairy, but you know, sometimes it's just everywhere. Have to pop a lactate and
eat pizza. Okay, good. As long as you're fighting the good fight. Kevin does the same thing. Kevin loves milkshakes, but they don't love him, but he still does it.
Fight it every day.
Every day. Sometimes right before a flight, which is always a bold choice, but he does it.
Oh, wow, Kevin. You're a renegade.
He's got
it's not my fault. They
call to you.
The burger joint is right next to the terminal that we always go to.
I know. They're really, they're practically forcing you to have a milkshake.
It's so good. And the company pays for it every time, you know?
It's true. Yeah.
You know, you can make a pretty damn good dairy-free milkshake if you get the right ingredients.
Nah, it sounds like nonsense. I'm out of here.
Sounds like nonsense.
You won't hear it. He will not hear it at all. He will not hear it at all.
I understand.
Mitch Krasen writes in and says, what of the roles you have played do you consider the most different, potentially the one that made you stretch the most?
I think Aloy definitely made me stretch the most, just because of the the requirements of that role. You know, I mean, it's, it's playing the lead of an open world game is interesting because just technically in terms of story, the player guides where Aloy goes, of course. So you have the critical path storyline, but then you have hundreds of side quests sometimes. So you can't, you have to make sure that even though Aloy has an arc and a really interesting story, she still needs to feel consistent no matter where you go as a player.
Yeah.
Because if you choose to save a quest that you got at the very beginning of the game until the very end, and Aloy's mostly completed her arc, you don't want to feel like, oh, why does she suddenly sound like, you know, pre-arc Aloy from the very beginning of the game? It has to sound consistent, but then you also need to make sure that this character has depth and has their arc feels satisfying and earned. And so it's an interesting thing to have to juggle to maintain sort of a baseline and a groundedness to her that applies no matter how the player chooses to play the game, while also feeling like she shifts and she changes and she's complex and she has layers. So I think it was definitely the role that taught me a lot about being a performer and stretched me the most.
For something like that, where, there's so much quest-based, but then also there's, like, decisions, right? And this is getting a little bit out of Aloy, but in general with what you've done of, like, you know, having a different choice, having a different thing. I think the easy answer so many people talk about, when, or example people give, is Yuri again in Spider-Man, right, where they recorded two different versions of every line, him just standing there or him swinging through the, like, exerting himself while he's on the phone. Do you, when there's something similar in a project you're working on where there's choice or consequence or whatever, is it that you read every one of the options, or you give a performance for every one of the options you could say as Aloy or whoever? Or is it that you, like, try to carry it through one of the narratives? Like, all right, here's where you're mad at this person. You go multiple lines with that. Or is it, you understand what I'm saying? Am I presenting this correctly?
Yes. So there was like a flashpoint or like a dialogue tree.
Yeah.
You take each situation as its own, little scene lit kind of thing.
Sure.
So for example, in Horizon, they have the flashpoints where, I can't believe I'm blanking, but it's like aggressive, analytical. I know, I'm such a fake gamer girl, aggressive. remember that whole thing, how dumb that was? Anyway.
A gamer girl? Yeah, thank God that's done with. Thank God nobody's mean to women on the internet anymore.
Yeah.
Despite we continue to fight, Ashley.
True.
I'm with you. Yeah, it was the heart, it was the
aggressive
fist.
And compassionate. So with that kind of thing, it's the sort of thing that you could choose to play Aloy aggressive the whole way through, and you have a different color of Aloy, but they all need to feel grounded in the same person.
Sure.
So it's one of those things where for Aloy, I think all of those things do exist within her. Even if you never choose the aggressive option as your playthrough, I think of her and I play her as someone that has all of those shades within her, so that when I get to those flashpoints, it doesn't feel like suddenly she's a different person. So everyone's Aloy is probably a tiny bit different, but I think the main thing is that there is a connection to all those points lead back to the same person. And it's important that that feels true. So, you know, it's tricky, but it's a really fun challenge.
Ryland Prince writes into patreon.com/kindoffunny and says, how is your time on Critical Role? Spoiler question, and it's not really a spoiler, but it kind of is, I guess, if you want to know nothing about what's happening on Critical Role. How was it to watch a player die? But we're not mentioning the player or anything like that.
Being on Critical Role was awesome. It's as much fun as you would imagine it to be.
Matt, even Travis Willingham, even him.
Even Travis. Well, actually, I wasn't really there whenever Travis was there.
Perfect. That's great then. Yeah, I'm sure you had a great time.
There was one session that I was. Or two, maybe. And it was delightful, honestly. you're just taking pot shots at beloved.
If you come up and you're one of my friends, you're going to get it.
I had such a good time. Matt's an incredible DM.
Yeah.
I'm friends with all those guys, so it was great. I mean, it felt like a home game that was being watched by thousands of people. And I was mortified when to see a player die. I really was like, I'm going to role play. Like, I'm really going to try to stay true to this character that I've created. I'm going to make choices that are not going to be popular if they are consistent with the person that I have laid out. and I did, and then he died, and it was intense. I left the room and one of the production people was crying and I was like, what have I done?
This is what we've done this to people.
Especially because I was filling in because Laura and Travis were gone because they just had a baby. And it was like they had given me their other baby to protect and I killed them.
You screwed this up.
But it was definitely epic. I'm not going to forget that.
Okay. Let's move to Mythic Quest. This comes from Pat. Hey, actually, I just want to ask you a bit about Mythic Quest. I was a big fan of the first season and really enjoyed the writing in particular. What kind of background did the rest of the writer's room have in video games? And do you have a particularly favorite episode? Thanks for coming on We Have Cool Friends.
Not a whole lot of background in video games. I think Rob had played a handful. He'd played like The Last of Us and a couple of other games. But apart from me, there was one other writer named Humphrey Carr, who were both big nerds and had played a ton of the games. And then also, we had a couple of execs from Ubisoft, Danielle and Jason. And Jason was also our resident game expert, but he'd also like worked in game development. So he had that viewpoint on it as well. But it was nice. It was a nice feeling of job security to be like, they can't get rid of me. I'm one of the only people who knows about games. not that they would. I was just really terrified of getting fired at the beginning, but they didn't do that. They're very nice. Good. And then favorite episode. I really like the... I really like the Nazi episode.
Oh, David's okay. Trying always to figure a fun out thing to
what, say. Yeah, it's always fun to say. David's basically trying to figure out if he can ban all the Nazis from the game. They find out they have a Nazi problem in the game. it's a fun episode.
Okay. Two more to get, and then we'll get you out of here. Johnny Bosworth writes in, of course, and you probably know Johnny Bosworth. He hosts an annual award show where he gives out the Bos. It's a little styrofoam cube. He spray paints gold. Everybody knows Johnny Bosworth. where have you found the most encouragement? I feel that it can be difficult to find inspiration to keep creating sometimes. Where do you look for that in this crazy time?
I often get encouraged and inspired by other people. I'm really lucky to work with some really incredible folks and really creative folks and really hardworking folks. And they... especially the writers that I work with on Mythic Quest and the cast I work with on Mythic Quest are so smart and so driven and so innovative, and talking to them and working with them just really gets me, I don't know, it just gets me excited and it makes me feel really creative. Good collaboration is like, it's hard to come by, but when you get it, it's the best feeling. So, what's really great about that show, I think, is that we really help kind of inspire each other and lift each other up. And it's really nice.
Good. I want to end on that, on this question, which is, I think, dovetails with that one. This one comes from Eagles fan Jordan. Sorry, Jordan, I butchered that. Eagles fan. Hi, Ashley. First of all, I wanted to thank you for being so passionate about bringing awareness to the opiate epidemic. My cousin fought with opiate addiction for years before he lost his fight. It truly means a lot to have someone with your platform bring awareness to an issue that was largely ignored for quite some time. I've also seen you open up about dealing with anxiety and other mental health issues. Your episode of Between the Sheets with Brian W. Foster really resonated with me. I've suffered with anxiety and poor mental health off and on for the last few years. So my question is, do you have any suggestions for how to sort of harness mental health issues into positivity, whether that's ways of trying to normalize the negative stigma associated with mental health issues or ways to use it to channel your own creative expression?
Wow. That was so well written. And I'm sorry to hear about your, who did he say he was?
Cousin.
His cousin. I'm sorry to hear about your cousin. That's really hard. I find that talking about it and being vulnerable about it, even if it's just within your circle of friends or family, having mental health issues is really useful, because I think issues like that, like anxiety or depression, they just get fed and they grow from lack of communication or lack of vulnerability around them. And it's really hard to it's really hard to admit when you're struggling, but especially this year, I think that people can see that everyone is struggling. And I think the more that we are not afraid to talk about that, because it's not just sharing stuff like that can help you, but you kind of have no idea how much it helps other people, because just telling your own story can really help people feel seen, is what I've learned. So I think just that alone in a personal setting can be really helpful and really powerful. And for me, I mean, what did Carrie Fisher always say? She said, take your broken heart, turn it into art. I think that it's a huge part of being a creator, is taking experiences like that and finding ways to convey that in your work or learn from it. I mean, I know sometimes people see mental health issues as roadblocks and things that stop them from doing what they want to do, but they can also be teachers. There's stuff that you can learn about yourself and other people from examining those issues and being honest about them. And if you treat those parts of yourself with compassion, there's actually a lot you can gain from having those experiences. Not to say that they don't fucking suck, but they aren't just all bad. They can be good teachers.
Incredibly well said, Ashley.
Thanks.
Ashley, thank you for being one of our cool friends.
Hey, thanks for letting me be one of your cool friends.
Of course, everybody can catch you right now. Marvel's Avengers. You are Kate Bishop, of course, like all the other characters that'll be added to this game. It's free. So if you have Marvel's Avengers, you can just pop it on, update it there. Kate Bishop is. But outside of that, Ashley, where can people keep up with you?
Well, we got a second season of Mythic Quest coming out, which we're all very, very excited of and proud of. Excited about and proud of. grammar got the best of me for a second.
It happens.
And there is a Disney animated show I'm going to be in called The Ghost and Molly McGee, which is coming out, I think, sometime next year. Don't quote me. And, of course, Horizon Forbidden West. Very excited.
2021 going to be a big year for you again, it looks like.
Hopefully, we'll see.
Hopefully. All things matter. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, this is We Have Cool Friends. It's your weekly podcast where we talk to our cool friends about the cool things they're doing. You can get it on youtube.com/kindoffunny, podcast services around the globe. Of course, you can support us on patreon.com/kindoffunny to get it ad-free, get your questions read, and have a good time. Remember two things. Number one, there will be no We Have Cool Friends for the rest of December. This is our last 2020 episode. We will be back on January 4th, 2021 for Kind of Funny Day. 2021. It'll be 12 hours of streaming content as we talk about what is next for Kind of Funny on our 6th anniversary. And also remember, Oregano's is your Arizona pizza chain at your neighborhood pizza joint, where they serve great food with ice cold specialty drinks and a side of good laughs. So whether you're bringing the whole family for dinner, your coworkers for a business lunch, or looking for a second date insurance, wink wink, we'll treat every meal like it's a big deal. The Chicago pizza restaurant. They got good looking thin pizzas too. I'm excited to get. Kevin, we got to go back to Arizona when COVID.
Yeah, you go to Arizona.
I'm all in. Look at this thing. It looks good.
Last time we went there, we just went to the WWE event and came home or whatever. We didn't even know about Oregano's. Now
and
we do.
Oregano's and Chino Banditos. And all that's right, about Chino. All that Phoenix has to offer.
Thank you so much for the food recommendation, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been our pleasure to serve you.